Welcome again to the Masters of the Secret series. I'm very glad to be with you again. Today I have with me Dr. Michael Beckwith of the Agape International Spiritual Center. Michael and I met in Jack Canfield's Transformational Leadership Council and appeared together in the hit DVD movie, The Secret. Michael is an amazing example of a human being living a spiritual as well as a practical life, and certainly someone who has mastered what people these days are calling the secret and the law of attraction. Let me tell you a few things about him before we get started. In the 1970s, Michael began an exploration into Eastern and Western spiritual teachings, leading him to some amazing realizations. As a result, he began to teach universal truth principles in what many people call the New Thought tradition of spirituality. And he does this at his Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles, which he founded in 1986. Some people see Michael Beckwith as carrying on the work of creating spiritual community in the tradition of Martin Luther King. Dr. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, wrote to him, "I greatly admire what you're doing to bring about the beloved community, which is certainly what my dear husband worked for and ultimately gave his life." What is Enlightenment magazine described Michael as a non-aligned trans-religious progressive, which sounds a little kinky to me. I'll have to ask Michael exactly what that is. He's appeared on international panels with other peacemakers and spiritual leaders, including His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Dr. T. R. A. Yarante of Sri Lanka, and Arun Gandhi, grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. He's co-founder of the Association for Global Thought, an organization dedicated to planetary healing and transformation. Michael is the originator of the life visioning process, which he teaches throughout the country, along with meditation, scientific prayer, and the spiritual benefits of selfless service. And he facilitates retreats, workshops, and seminars. His books include Inspirations of the Heart, 40-Day Mind Fast Soul Feast, and A Manifesto of Peace. In 2003, his work was acknowledged in the Congressional Record of the 107th Congress, and he's been the recipient of numerous humanitarian awards, including the 2004 Africa Peace Award, the Thomas Kilgore Prophetic Witness Award, the Howard Thurman Stained Glass Window Award by Morehouse College, a commissioned oil portrait for Morehouse's prestigious Hall of Preachers, and the Humanitarian Award of the National Conference for Compassion and Justice. He was one of the stars of the hit DVD movie The Secret, and he's recently appeared on Larry King Live and twice on Oprah, speaking about The Secret and the Law of Attraction. I was a guest at his Agape International Spiritual Center a couple of Sundays ago, along with about 4,000 other people, and I'll tell you that Dr. Michael Beckwith creates an amazing transformational experience in everyone with whom he comes in contact. He has an amazing talent for helping people experience their own inner divinity, as well as their spiritual connection with other people, with God, and really with the entire universe. And he does this in a very tangible way. Michael, I'm so glad to have you here today.
Bill, it's my pleasure and honor to be here. It's amazing listening to that resume. You don't you just do what you do day to day, moment by moment, to be a beneficial presence on the planet, and never even think about awards or any of that kind of stuff. We're just here to become our real self, you know.
Well, that may be one of the reasons why you've made a lot of those awards, because you haven't been focusing on them, been focusing on actually doing something.
Absolutely.
So
I think that's the key.
I'm so impressed with what you do, and I'm so glad that I was able to actually be there for one of your services. You seem to get into a state when you speak that is almost like, I say this partly tongue-in-cheek, but it's almost like you're channeling. And I know that state myself because I get into it sometimes too when I'm speaking. What happens for you when you're speaking?
Well, it has evolved over the years, but of course my life is centered around my meditation practice. And so what happens is I'll go up to speak, and I'm just open to the energy of inspiration and transforming knowledge to flow through me. And so I'll begin to speak on whatever the theme is, and then at some point, the energy itself, the knowledge itself about that subject will begin to pour forth through me, and I'll begin to have a greater understanding even in the moment of what I want to talk about.
You know, that's interesting you'd say that, because the same thing happens to me. I almost always speak extemporaneously when I'm in front of groups, and many times some of my best ideas come while I'm speaking. I figure things out or put things together in new ways that I had not thought about before. Does that happen to you too?
Oh, absolutely, all the time. I call it my surprise. I'm not satisfied when I speak unless I'm surprised. I have to be surprised at the new way it's languaged, or a new insight into it, a new interpretation of it, and it will surprise me, which means that I've been available. I've made myself available to the larger knowledge rather than staying with what I thought I knew.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I'm teaching my students that a lot of them have some trouble with is kind of getting their linear mind out of the way and letting this other thing come through, a kind of tapping into their unconscious mind or spirit or whatever you want to call it. Some people are so stuck in.
Well, they're nervous. I think people, you know, have identified themselves in a very limited way, and in order to touch these other dimensions that we're talking about, they have to absolutely like reconstruct their identity, and it's a very difficult thing to leap into that, because you actually, and when you use the word extemporaneous, which means out of time, you're absolutely allowing yourself to move out of time so the eternal can take over. And for many people, it's very scary because they're living their life primarily from memorization. They're memorized things, which is like a filing cabinet, rather than being in the flow of the energy, which is spontaneous goodness happening. It's a totally different way of being in the world.
Yeah, you know, I have been a jazz musician for
you actually understand
decades, and it's very much like that, because when you're playing a jazz solo, you don't have time to think your way through it. You either are there and you're playing it and it's coming out of you, or not. But the jazz player, just like a public speaker, has to pay a price in terms of you know, investigating certain things, practicing, or whatever
right.
you want to call it. You know, a person can't just get up there and do what you do without having some preparation.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Then, having done the preparation, you know, you get up there, and instead of thinking and analyzing your way through it, you just let it come out of you, and it does.
Right. There's a difference between playing the piano and making music. When a person learns how to play the piano, and they go through the scales, and they learn all of that, they learn how to play the piano, and then at some point, when they release themselves, they're able to make music. And this is exactly what you're talking about. My wife, Ricky, oftentimes calls me that. She says, you're like a jazz musician up there speaking. You get on a theme and a roll on a theme, and then suddenly that theme will go into an area that you've never talked about before, and it'll become a sweet rift. Then it'll come back to the original theme again, and then go off on another rift and come back on the same theme again until it's nice, sewed up, and it's this nice song that's been played.
Yeah, you do something on the stage. I mean, you have a completely different style than I am. You're much more charismatic than I am, and I'm a lot into content, and you're I think more inspirational when you speak than I do. But I do something similar to what you do, in that sometimes people will think I'm going far afield of where I started, but at the end I wrap it all together. And anyone listening would think that it was a thought-out talk with a certain structure and that I'd organized it beforehand, but I don't.
Right.
And the talk that I heard you give a couple of Sundays ago had that same quality. It looked like it was something you had structured in advance, but I just had this sense that you were doing it in the moment without having planned anything other than I'm going to talk about.
Right.
You know.
I know the theme. I know the theme because I pick a theme of the month, so that keeps informing me, but I don't know the topic yet.
Well, and that kind of brings us around to this idea of the secret and the law of attraction, because You know, I think that when you have a topic that you're going to talk about, a theme, and, you know, you've just sort of said to yourself, okay, I'm going to talk about that. What's going to come out when I talk? And just by kind of giving yourself that focus, your unconscious mind or whatever you want to call it, there's a lot of names you could call it, it actually begins to kind of search through all the data banks and starts looking at all the available information outside of your awareness, and then it's just kind of all available there.
Absolutely. Again, based on our identity, you know, we are, if you want to use the language of Jesus, we would say that we are the light that lighteth up every man and woman that cometh into the world, or we can say that we are a holographic expression of infinite possibility, or we could say that we're a singular manifestation of a cosmic destiny. Whatever language you use, the knowledge, the wisdom is within us. And you said something very important, that no one can just step up there without preparation. And that preparation is, for me, my way of life that's centered around my meditation, my prayer work, my introspection, my study, my service. All of those things then become my way of life. So when I'm speaking, I'm actually speaking about what I'm living. So it's not foreign to my life. I'm not talking about something that I'm not living myself.
Yeah, I remember Dale Carnegie saying that the big key to public speaking was to speak about something that you knew something about. You know, a lot of people get up and try to give a talk about something they really don't know anything about.
Right.
And that's what happens when you're in school, too. They give you a topic to talk about rather than having you talk about something that you actually know something about.
Something that you're passionate about.
Right, exactly.
So
we've kind of, you know, I didn't even mean to go in this direction necessarily when we started this conversation, but we've sort of hit on one of the things that kind of allows this thing that people are calling the secret to manifest, and that has to do with kind of surrendering and trusting your unconscious mind, and then with the provision that, of course, you do have to do some kind of preparation in order to have something in there that you can tap in. So what ideas do you have about, because I know a lot of people have trouble doing this, how would you help someone to allow themselves to tap into this?
Well, when I teach many of my advanced students, what I have them do is I take them back into a place in which they first had either a tremendous healing in their life or a tremendous revelation that changed their life. And I have them get into that state of describing what that felt like, what was going on when that was occurring. What does that feel like? And begin to make that particular state very real. And then I'll give them a topic or something to speak about from that state. And I say, okay, now just go with it. Don't use the thinking mind here. Just be in the state of that expansion and see what happens. Talk about the healing. Talk about the revelation. And what will inevitably happen is that person will begin to speak not from their limited point of view from a memory bank. They'll begin to speak from the state itself. And ultimately, after with a little practice, they're able to engage that state and let the information flow from that wider paradigm rather than from the smaller paradigm. I dare say that everybody listening has had moments of being in the zone, moments of sobriety, moments of insight. Go back to that and revisit it and throw yourself open to it. They use the word surrender to it. You'll discover much knowledge that you're now deleting, thinking you don't know it. You'll discover it in that state, and you'll begin to speak from it.
That's really good advice, because it does have a lot to do with the state you're in, and most people kind of just allow their state to happen unconsciously. They don't intentionally get themselves into whatever state they want to be in, and it's really because they don't know how to do it, and they probably even more fundamental, they don't really know that they could do it.
Right.
But, the internal pictures you make, the internal dialogue you have, the feelings that you decide to get yourself into, all of those things are really under your control if you exercise that control. So if you get in that open flow state, then it's very easy to tap into whatever it is you have prepared by living it or reading about it or experiencing it or whatever it is.
Absolutely. And again, it comes back to it being our way of life. And so I think the other thing that's very important, too, is that people will sometimes think about the audience more than they tap into the information that's coming through. And I know for me, I know the audience is there. I'm connected with them. I feel them. I appreciate them. I love them. There's a love affair going on in my awareness about them. But I'm speaking, I'm not playing for the audience. I'm actually making myself receptive to the flow of information. And the audience's receptivity is helping that flow, that connection.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting dynamic with an audience because, I mean, when I speak, what I do is I purposely expand my awareness to include the entire audience. But I don't really consciously focus on the audience very much. But I know I'm always receiving information from the audience that kind of tells me what they might need in terms of the information that I'm presenting. And so there is kind of a kind of an energy flow or an energy circle between the speaker and the audience. But you're right. I mean, you can't really just focus on the audience. You have to just let it come from inside of you.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a powerful state because after a while, sometimes I have the experience where the audience. It's not that they disappear. There's two things that happen. I see them differently. They're like light. I see them like light. And then, two, I become aware that there's something needed there, like mm-hmm. you just said.
Right.
I can be aware there's somebody over on my left that's wondering, how is this going to be helpful for them to pay their rent? Or somebody else is concerned about a healing in their life or something to that effect. And then what I'll do is take what seems to be broad and almost abstract, even though it's not abstract, it's real, I'll bring it into a very concrete example because of that inner nudging.
Uh-huh, right, exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Now, most people that are listening to this, I'm assuming, are probably not public speakers, but this same dynamic we're talking about can be used in all kinds of areas of life, not just in public speaking. Can you help generalize this to other areas of life?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're talking about is our way of life. And so when you begin to live for this flow moving through you, you begin to understand that your mode of being in the world changes or your reason for waking up changes, and you're not necessarily going to do your career. You're actually going to provide this energy everywhere you go. You're going to be an avenue of this flow regardless of what your profession may be. So then you begin to discover that though you may be multitasking in this world, you may be a mother, you may be a father, you may have a certain kind of career and other kind of vocations and avocations, you're really entering into the space where you're allowing this energetic flow to occur in whatever it is that you're doing. So as you just indicated, it may not be that you're publicly speaking, but you could be a plumber. You know, I had a friend of mine who was a plumber, and he would get into this space, and he could walk into the person's house, and after a while, he knew exactly what the problem was, and he would go to whatever the pipe fixture was or whatever the thing was, and he would invariably find out what the issue was. He would always repair it to a greater degree than what the people were paying him for because it was a part of his life work, and inevitably, of course, he'd be hired back or his particular career blossom. Everybody wanted him to work because he was in this flow of energy. Even though he was a plumber, he was the best plumber.
You know, what I have learned over the years is that there's a part of each person that knows exactly what to do in each moment, that can see all the possibilities and evaluate all of them in terms of what the desired outcome is, and knows exactly what to do. And all of this really happens outside of linear thinking. And when you tap into this flow state or whatever you want to, you know, being in the presence or whatever term you want to use, when you tap into that, you, no matter what you're doing, whether it's you're dealing with your children or you're at your job or wherever you are, you know just what to do. And it's the right thing to do. And it works.
Yeah, I call it divine compelling right action. If something compels you to take a particular action, and that which is compelling you is beyond your present paradigm. But it is something that you've been courting and longing for and touching through your inner work, and you end up doing something, and you may not logically know why you did it. But in hindsight, you look back, you say, that was the perfect thing to do. I went there and I met this person, and that person was a part of the flow of this project I was working on, or whatever the scenario may be. But something compelled you to do something. And it's a very powerful way of living.
Well, and sometimes it seems as if what's going on, it can seem as if it's negative. You know, you crash your car, or you lose something, or something happens that ordinarily you would think was not what you wanted, but then it turns out that it set up something that was exactly what was needed or wanted.
Yeah, sometimes it's a growth experience. You actually, sometimes you have a person will make a gigantic request of the universe, going back to the laws of the secret. And in order for that request to be granted, you have to change. And so what looks like a negative experience was actually the universe qualifying you or requalifying you to receive what you have asked for.
Right, exactly. You know, when a negative experience happens, very often the best thing to do is to say, okay, what qualities do I need to develop here that would make this into a positive experience?
Absolutely, that's exactly it. I had an opportunity to say that on the Oprah show regarding negative experiences, and that is the very empowering question. The way our language is very similar, what qualities do I need to grow? What qualities do I need to manifest in order to have peace of mind in this circumstance?
Right, exactly.
And as those qualities begin to emerge, they either neutralize the circumstance or they change it.
Napoleon Hill used to say, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit.
Absolutely.
And then he would add, but you have to look for it, and you have to germinate the seed. And unfortunately, all too many people, when something negative happens, instead of looking for that seed of an equivalent or greater benefit, they just start focusing on what they don't want or don't like about it. And then they not only feel bad instantly, because when you focus on what you don't want, you instantly feel bad, but they also then attract they're essentially giving their unconscious mind an instruction to create or attract more of the very thing they didn't want. And then they wonder why their life is circling the drain, so to speak.
you've expressed that absolutely perfectly. And what we're developing is the capacity to choose rather than react. And if an individual can have enough awareness to choose to ask that question, you know, what lesson is here for me? What blessing is here for me? What am I to learn here in this particular experience? Rather than going into wishful thinking or fear thinking or worry thinking, they become very empowered by that choice, and the universe now opens up tons of opportunities that heretofore we couldn't have even seen because we weren't asking the right question.
You know, I remember when I was considerably younger, and I had read about a lot of these principles in books, and I understood them intellectually, at least, pretty well, but I would always find myself after the fact remembering them instead of when they were needed. And what really turned that around for me was meditating, and
absolutely,
particularly meditating with Holosync, which, you know, is kind of my baby, but whether it's Holosync or some other kind of meditation helps people develop awareness, and it takes awareness in order to develop that witness posture where you can see what you're doing, what's going on around you, and kind of it that's really what I think a big part of what helps you tap into that part of you that we were talking about before that knows exactly what to do and how to evaluate every situation. I know you are a lifelong meditator.
Oh, absolutely. Over 30 years. It is the key. First of all, meditation is one of the most powerful technologies for evolution of consciousness or expanded awareness. And choice is a function of awareness. And awareness comes via meditation. So I teach and I've taught for years that there may be many techniques for meditation, but it is still the most powerful technology for awakening awareness and developing that witness state, as you just mentioned, and being able to observe yourself, observe everything from a place of non-reaction, which does not mean detachment. It just means not attachment to an outcome. It's a powerful modality.
Absolutely, and I could, if I had to recommend one thing that people do, I would recommend that they meditate, because a lot of other things flow from developing that kind of awareness. And, you know, when people see you, for instance, living the life the way you are, and wonder, well, how does he do that? Because I feel so chaotic inside. One of the main things they need to do is quiet their mind, and meditation is probably the best way anyone's ever come up with to do that.
Yeah, I don't know of a stronger technology. There are many technologies that are very powerful, but meditation is the key. And what I tell people is, in the beginning, you will try to fit meditation into your life, but as you evolve and grow, your life will revolve around your meditation. Just as you wake up every day and at some point you will take a shower, you'll brush your teeth, you do certain things, your life is revolved around that, meditation will become just as important. And you will not go through your day without a shower or a bath or brushing your teeth. You will not go through your day without that appointment with the infinite.
Absolutely. Just like you wouldn't skip a meal or go a day without eating unless you had some reason for it, you were fasting,
right,
or something, you wouldn't go without meditation too. Let's get back to the idea of the secret, because a lot of people are, you know, talking about that lately. One of the criticisms of the secret has been that it, what's been emphasized about it, almost seems like magic, and
right,
and I really don't think it is magic, and I think it's almost a discern, you know, there's a certain amount of people who are having trouble in life, and they really would love for there to be some sort of magic that where they don't really have to do anything. All they have to do is wish and hope for things, and they'll get it. One of the things that bothered me about The Secret was that it de-emphasized two things that I think are very important. So I'd like your ideas on this. You know, obviously everything begins with how you focus your mind. And so that part of it is really important. When you focus your mind on something, it gives you ideas about how to create it or get it. It motivates you. It causes you to notice resources in your environment that you could use to get it. And
right,
it causes you to tap into or develop internal resources that you may not have been manifesting so far. But then the second step, in my opinion, is you have to then take action. And the third aspect is that the action has to be of value to someone. I mean, if people are looking for something back as a result of using the quote-unquote secret, you aren't going to get something back from the universe unless you're putting something out into the universe. So
that's the key.
You know, so what you do, you have to take action, and the action has to be of value in some way.
Absolutely. Now, I love what you're saying, because I often tell individuals that I don't believe in magical thinking. This is not about magic, and it's not magical thinking. It's not wishful thinking, and it's not really positive thinking. It's really placing yourself in a position to have an affirmative realization of what's so in this magnificent, elegant universe, and then walking in the direction of that. See, if faith is often, I often define faith as being out there where the action is with all systems go. In other words, if you really have faith, then you're also taking the action that says that you have faith. So you're out there where the action is with all systems go, knowing that everything is working together for your good. So it's not just sitting around waiting for something to happen. It is walking in the direction of your prayer work, knowing that it's already happened in the mind of God and in the mind of the universe. So I'm right with that. I think that The Secret as a vehicle has been a wonderful vehicle to really bring this conversation to a larger audience and into a mainstream conversation. It's done its job there. It was a very colloquial and parochial introduction into the laws. very primary, and so therefore it couldn't cover everything that we would cover in a class or something like that. But it does get people to thinking that they can begin to have dominion over their life. They don't have to be a victim to circumstance or situations. They can change their life, thus changing their experience, changing their experiences. And so so I think it's been a very good vehicle. And some people that could look at it and think we're talking about wishful thinking of some sort, and that could not be further from the truth. It's about developing a way of life, making declarations, intentions, using the creative imagination, watching your conversation, watching the company that you keep. You know, look at who you're around. Are the people you're around going or at the place where you want to be in life? You know, what kind of conversations flow out of their mouth? So it's a whole manner of strategies that, when applied, will change your life and change your circumstances.
You know, in a way, it often boils down to the fact that people don't really realize how powerful their mind is.
Right.
You know, they don't really realize that whatever you're focusing your mind on, and particularly if you're adding strong emotion, and even more particularly if you're taking action on it, your mind really can attract or create anything. Not without taking action, certainly. But, you know, some people think that if they focus on wealth, that a dump truck full of gold coins is going to come and drop its load in their driveway or something. I don't see that happening for anybody. But certainly if you think about wealth, you're going to figure out how to get it if you're willing to pay the price to get it. And the thing people don't get is that they're already powerfully manifesting whatever they're placing their intention on. It's not that people aren't good at creating what they focus on. It's that people's focusing process is going on autopilot. And, you know, so people have to take it from autopilot to doing it intentionally.
Yes.
And consciously.
Yes.
That's the trick.
No, that is the trick, because people are basically a living self-prophecy of their ambient focus, you know?
Absolutely.
And once you can begin to take dominion over your focus and establish intention, as you indicated earlier, you start to see other opportunities you didn't notice before. You start to magnetize yourself so that people that could possibly be involved with what you're about to do start to come into your life. Or sometimes you notice that they've been in your life all the time, but you didn't even really notice their value or their importance and the camaraderie that was there. It's just like many years ago, when I shifted more towards vegetarianism, I started noticing all these vegetarian restaurants. And I thought they had just been built, you know. And I remember, as a young man in my 20s, and I went into one restaurant and I said, "Oh my God, how long have you been here? This is beautiful." And they said, "20 years." I had been driving that route for years as a young man, and had never noticed that restaurant. I'd only noticed the fat burger, you see. But as soon as I shifted my intention, I noticed that particular restaurant that had been there for years, almost as many years as I was old. And it just opened that up, and that's what happens to people. Intention will allow you to see things that are perhaps already in your life as a resource that you don't even know about.
Yeah, everybody's had the experience, you know, buying a car, and then suddenly you notice all the other cars that are the same kind, and you weren't noticing them before. And I mean, that's a mundane example, but when you decide that you're going to start a business or that you want to, you know, create something in your life, all of a sudden, if you pay attention, there's all these, you know, you hear a snatch of conversation. Somebody's talking about the very thing that you want to do but aren't quite sure how to do. And so you walk over and say, "Excuse me, but you were just mentioning investing, and I'm just learning to do that. Can I talk to you about it?" Or you go to the bookstore, and suddenly here are all these books that you didn't even know existed that suddenly just almost jump off the shelf into your hand because you suddenly changed your focus to something that you wanted.
Absolutely. Now, this is very important, because we all have different ways of saying this, but sometimes we'll say that the human being is a deletion machine that's deleting so much of reality and only participating in a very narrow band or frequency of it. And through our focus and our resolve, our attention and commitment, we begin to notice a greater frequency, a greater band of reality that is here all the time, but we've deleted most of it.
Yes, there are actually more than 20 different deletion filters that people have in their mind, and I forget what the statistic is, but it's there's millions of bits of information that come in through your senses in every moment, and less than a tenth of a percent of them people actually focus on. One of the things that I teach people to do is to use these filters intentionally, so that you're and that's another thing that you can turn over to that part of you that knows exactly what to do.
Right.
But you have to look at these filters and play with them and study them and pretty much what I like to say is play around with them, and pretty soon you get to the point where in any given situation you can filter things in exactly the way that gives you the information that you need to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. And it happens completely seamlessly. It doesn't happen through effort. It doesn't happen in your linear mind either. So anyone can learn to control their mind if they really are willing to pay the price to learn how it works.
Absolutely. So, just paying the price and the other thing that's very important, because we're deletion machines, I don't really like the word machine, but, deletion beings, as we've indicated earlier, many people are just focusing on the thing they do not want to happen. So they're deleting everything except for the possibility of this negative thing occurring.
That's exactly.
And then if they take an action and prepare themselves against the negative thing occurring with emotion, they end up actually creating the energy of the thing that they're preparing against, because that's where their attention is, that's where their energy is flowing, that's where their emotion is, and they're actually using this mind, which can be an avenue of awareness for such beauty, they're using it as a way to magnetize negativity to themselves, and then wonder why it's happening, or wonder why I call it driving through life with your brakes on. You have all these positive things that you want to do, but you can't get going because your mind is really stuck and focused on all the things you hope that don't happen.
Yes, I mean, it's amazing how people can filter out all the possibilities, and then it looks as if there are none.
Absolutely, which we live in a magnificent universe where there's infinite opportunities. So if you're not seeing any, you're definitely looking through a glass darkly. Some
yes.
people can't even receive a compliment.
And and the only way you can do this really is to be unconscious, because the results of focusing on what you don't want, what you're afraid of, what you're worried about, what you want to avoid are so terrible that if a person does that with awareness, does it consciously, they can't keep doing it. They can't continue. And so that kind of thinking just falls away. That's why I think meditation and developing awareness is so important.
Yeah, you're speaking my language, because that which was unconscious is now becoming conscious, which is what spiritual growth and development is really all about, bringing that which is you don't know about, that which is unconscious, into your awareness. And once you shine your light of awareness of it, it brings it up by the root. It no longer has power over you because now it's conscious. You see it coming.
Yeah, people wonder why they keep doing the same dysfunctional thing over and over again. And the reason is they're doing it unconsciously. And there's an interesting distinction here, because most people that have been in personal growth for a while could write a book about their stuff.
Right.
They cognitively, intellectually, they know that they're doing whatever it is, but they're not watching themselves do it with awareness.
Right.
They have a way of going unconscious and doing it. So knowing that you're doing something is not the same as doing it with awareness.
Absolutely. I wish to help people break the habit of cigarette smoking by that very process. Instead of them being unconscious, just lighting up cigarette after cigarette, I said, no, don't stop smoking cigarette. Take the cigarette and enjoy every single puff. Be aware of the smell on your fingers. Be aware of the smell of the smoke getting into your clothes. Be aware of it, the smoke going into your lungs and what the process of that is doing to your body. Just be totally aware of you absolutely smoking that entire cigarette. And then perhaps even be aware of the feeling that you have right before you start smoking the cigarette.
That feeling of anxiety.
Right, fear. And you'll begin to discover that that's a compulsive behavior that you're using to block yourself from feeling your fear. And once you become aware of that, and you're aware that you can be in fear and still do what you have to do anyway, the cigarette smoking will fall off because it doesn't have any payoff anymore.
Absolutely.
So awareness itself has broken the habit of many people doing many compulsive behaviors.
Right. And in teaching this to people, one of the things that happens sometimes is that people try this. They set out to become more aware of something they're doing, and at first it's not that easy for them because they're just not used to paying attention, and they try it and it doesn't seem to work, and then they say, "Oh, I tried that and it didn't work," and then they quit trying it. And so I try to tell them, look, if you sat down to learn to play the piano, you wouldn't expect to play a Beethoven piano sonata the first time. You'd have to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star at first or something.
Right.
And so be okay with there being a learning curve. And if you're just having fun playing with it, you can just keep doing it. Is why little kids learn to play the piano so easily, because they're not so critical of themselves. They're willing to be beginners for a while. And so, you might have to be a beginner in being aware of yourself, too. And that's okay.
I think it's very important. And this whole concept of play, of playing with it, takes the angst and the seriousness out of it. You can actually play a game. How long can I stay aware before I go unconscious about any particular behavior or thought pattern? And as you just indicated, as you do it more as a play rather than as this serious thing, I'm going to try to become enlightened, you get much more benefit from it. There's a freeing of energy. And I'll always remember John Randolph Price, his wife, when she came back from a near-death experience, said that while she was dead and on the other side, they told her that the vibration of play and the vibration of prey were very, very similar. That when you're praying and when you're playing, you're in that wide-open, creative, grateful, all-things-are-possible state. And so this whole idea of playing with it is very close to being in a real state of prayer and observation, and much more benefit comes from that rather than trying to do this thing seriously.
Yeah, and if you're playing the game of, okay, how long can I remain aware before I go unconscious, and then you discover, oh, darn it, I went unconscious. Part of the playing aspect of it is that you don't then beat yourself up for it. There's just no point in, lashing yourself for being human. I just got an advanced copy of a book by Dennis Genpo Roshi, who is the highest ranked Zen master who is not Japanese in the world. He lives in Boulder, Colorado. He's a friend of Ken Wilber's, and I met him through Ken. And he is so willing to be human. In this book, he reveals the fact, here he is, this Zen master, but he's revealing the fact that he has all the same feelings, all the same doubts, all the same stumbles, all these things that other people do. He's not trying to put himself on a pedestal and claim some sort of perfection, but he's learned to not beat himself up over the fact that he's a human being.
Mm-hmm. That's compassion.
Yes, I think you first have to have compassion for yourself before you can have it for other people. And I just kind of flashed on that when you were talking about it, because he's such a great example of that. And people are so hard on themselves when they...
Which is an ego trip, basically. It's one of the ways that the ego traps you into staying in that present identity, is to get you flustered and angry at your mistakes, rather than just laughing at yourself and do a do-over.
Well, you know, that reminds me of something else I wanted to ask you about. You know, I'm sure this happens to you, but I have a lot of people saying to me as I communicate with them, well, it's easy for you to say that because, you know, you're really good at it or you're really advanced or whatever. And I have to point out to them that I didn't spring out of the womb this way. In fact, I was quite unhappy and quite miserable a number of years ago. And I got to where I am, and I'm certainly not claiming that I'm finished or anything, but I got to where I am by a lot of hard work and or a lot of hard play, you might say.
Right. And playing hard.
So anyway, well, and in the beginning, I was doing the same thing we're talking about. I was beating myself up and doing a lot of these things that we're kind of cautioning people to not do. Anyway, I know that you came from a place that wasn't anything like where you are now. Can you tell a little bit? I know it's a long story, but just give sort of the highlights of where you came and.
Well, I'll tell you that this kind of consciousness, I think, within all of us. But I can remember my own story, is trying to emerge through us. I mean, we're progressive beings, so the consciousness of this expanded awareness is always trying to break through. And first of all, I remember at age 11. I remember having the experience of being in an expanded state and in choosing to stay in a small state so that I would be my mother's son, my uncle's nephew, my grandmother's grandson. I remember that conscious thought that I didn't want them to know about this state. And then later on in high school, I remember being on the radio program called Kids Stay in School, and this energy passed through me. And it was very articulate, very powerful, and I would shut it down in order to be mediocre, in order to fit in with the rest of the high school students. And then later on, as a young adult attending college, I remember going onto the dark side a little bit and selling marijuana. And I can remember on my very last dope deal getting arrested. But right before that, I had a major spiritual opening, where I was killed, and when I woke up the next morning, I could see that we were surrounded by this universal presence that at the time I called love beauty. And it loved me at my core and continues to still do so, and it was more beautiful than I could possibly even express or describe. It's everywhere. Every animate and inanimate object or being is just engulfed in this undulation of love and beauty and light. And I went to court. And I was in that zone going into court, and I'd already got the inner validation that I was not going to go to jail for what I had done, and so I was totally unconcerned about the trial. I was reading books on meditation, meditating in the courtroom while my attorneys were doing their thing, and ultimately, of course, it was thrown out of court based on a technicality that they had used an informant, and the informant refused to come to court. I mean, I'm giving the long story, very short. But I came out of that space of this young man who was selling marijuana based on a thought form of scarcity, not enough opportunities, not enough to go around, so I resorted to that to pay my tuition and also to have a stash of my own, and opened up into a whole larger paradigm of there's more than enough good to go around. There's plenty of opportunities. There's never scarcity in this multidimensional universe. There's only a scarcity of ideas based on a faulty notion of life. And I've never looked back. And so I absolutely appreciate those moments of darkness, those moments of making decisions from the darkness, because I learned such valuable lessons. I don't judge myself. I don't judge other people and the mistakes and the missteps that they make. And today, I see there's nothing but opportunities everywhere and possibilities, and I live in the possibility and hope other people do the same. And if I fall and stumble, I'm not going to beat myself up, as you just talked about. Whoops, slipped. Get back up.
Yes, and even a Michael Beckwith can slip. Anybody can slip. And you know, the interesting thing that you alluded to is that the slips are often the most valuable experiences. You know, it's always seemed to me that there's more information in a misstep in a way than there is in doing something right.
You know, you are really speaking my language here, because I tell the folks at Agape all the time, when you look back on your life, when did you grow the most? When you had a challenge or when you didn't have a challenge?
Exactly.
And when you were on the challenge and you didn't know how to get around it or how to get over it or how to get under it, you were forced to grow spiritually. And when everything is just smoothly going along, no challenges, everything is hunky-dory, you're not forced to grow. I'm not saying you're not going to meditate, you're not going to pray. But when that challenge comes up and it forces you to go to another level, you find dimensions of resources and powers and capabilities within your soul that, because they weren't called on before, they didn't manifest. They were just latent.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're not saying to people to seek out negative experiences.
Absolutely.
And you don't need to. Enough of them will come your way without you having to seek them out. That's just the way the universe is. But, you know, but then there's something you have to do when you have these experiences, because some people do what we were talking about earlier. They just focus on what they're afraid of, focus on what they're worried about. Those people generally don't get as much, at least, out of those experiences. But if you go to the, you know, what do I have to be grateful for here? Or what's the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit in this?
Right.
Or you know, what do I need to learn here? You know, in some way, you ask yourself those kinds of questions. Then you can take those things and make them into huge, huge opportunities to get more in line with this presence that we've been talking about.
Well, what you're talking about here, too, is to come out of wishful thinking. And oftentimes people, when they enter into a tough situation, they'll wish they weren't there. Or they'll wish that they were someone else, or they wish they hadn't done what they had done to get there. And so wishful thinking doesn't really bring you any insight. Once you say, you know, what is it that I can learn from this situation? How can I grow from this situation? What quality has to emerge for me to have peace of mind? Now you've moved out of wishful thinking, and you've asked a very empowering question. And because the universe will answer any question you place out there, you now become a candidate for insight.
You know, let me tell real quickly a long story that I'll make short about how Centerpoint got started. The first year that after I started Centerpoint, it was just me. Actually, I did have a partner at that time. Anyway, we had sold $12,000 worth of Holosync in that year, and then a competitor sued us for $1 million. And I was waking up in the middle of the night with anxiety attacks, sitting up in bed with my heart racing, because I didn't have very much money. The only thing I had was a house. I was afraid it was going to get taken away from me. I didn't know anything about the legal system or lawsuits or anything like that. And I went to my attorney and I said, "How much is this likely to cost?" And he said, "Well," by the way, it was a completely frivolous lawsuit.
Right.
But that doesn't matter a lot of times in lawsuits, whether it's frivolous or not. They're still expensive and stressful. But anyway, I asked my attorney what this could cost, and he said, "Well, you're probably going to find out why they say don't make a federal case out of it, because this could cost you $150,000 in legal fees if it goes all the way." And my partner said, "Well, this isn't worth defending with $150,000, and we don't have that anyway. We should just fold the tent and, you know, quit." And I said to myself, what would this company look like if it was worth defending with $150,000 worth of legal fees? And I began thinking about what a company of that kind would look like. And today, it's exactly like that.
Right.
But I never would have went through that thought process if I had not been sued. And by the way, my partner, who was actually the partner from hell, very negative person, he actually, I bought his half of the company for $1 because he wanted out. And those two things really, really, really is what started Centerpoint. It wouldn't be here today if it hadn't been for that, and I wouldn't have all the, you know, the life that I have. And the other thing that I did, coincidentally, when the sheriff came to my door, and said, someone doesn't like you very much, and had me sign for this lawsuit. I, right at that moment, I had been reading for about the 30th time, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And one of the things he stresses is what I said earlier, every adversity carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. I went down to, in my basement to my little office, and I started making a list of all the potential benefits of being sued for $1 million. And at first I couldn't think of very many, but ultimately over the next 2 weeks I listed 60-some benefits. And I wish I still had that list. It got lost somewhere, but every one of them came true. And it's because I focused on them instead of all the negative stuff.
You thought outside your normal paradigm.
Exactly.
So you got to have the inspiration from the God mind flow through you. I tell the congregation, you know, I quoted, for instance, the Queen in Alice in Wonderland, where she says, believe at least 10 impossible things before breakfast. And I'll say, you know, wake up, and before you have breakfast, just start believing 10 impossible things. It can be personal or in a global space. And get into that space of actually believing that, and then the kind of thoughts from that realm will begin to come through you, and you'll understand why it is written that with God all things are possible, because you'll be thinking from the God paradigm rather than from the merely human paradigm.
Yeah, Lewis Carroll was a mystic.
Absolutely.
He was an amazing guy.
Absolutely. 10 impossible things before breakfast.
That's a good idea. That's an excellent, excellent idea. So I'm wondering now, in light of all the stuff that we've discussed, Michael, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening to this probably that feel stuck, that aren't sure what to do exactly. They hear us talk about these things, but they're not sure really what exactly to do first. What advice do you give to people in terms of what to do first?
Of course, it would begin. It would always be dependent upon the person that's sitting in front of me and what I feel that would be beneficial for them. But in a general sense, a person is stuck and not living the life that they feel that they're ordained to live. I would begin to just write down, first of all, the life that they want to live. Just begin to describe it.
Yeah.
The law basically says you don't describe what you see. You see what you describe. And so you begin to describe that life. You don't have to believe it at first, just to describe the kind of life you want to live. And then read it on a regular basis. And then you take that description and you begin to feel what it would feel like if you were living that kind of life. What would it feel like if I actually lived a life in which my finances, that particular structure, was stabilized in my life and I was prosperous? What would it begin to feel like if I was surrounded by loving associates? What would it begin to feel like if I was very healthy and robust and energetic? And then you take an action. You say, if I really believed this, what action would I need to take to prove to myself that I believe that? Now, the rub is this. The action can be real or symbolic. The mind doesn't know the difference between a real or a symbolic action. So if you begin to take an action like that, it begins to recalibrate your nervous system, and it speeds up the day where you'll begin to see what you're describing. And as we talked about earlier, then you're open and receptive now to hunches, intuition, gut feelings, out of the blue kind of thoughts. They're not coming out of the blue. They're coming from the mind of God. It's called inspiration. You begin to be inspired from another realm that you haven't been inhabiting because you've been focusing your attention on what you don't have. Those are just very basic things. If a person would begin to do that on a regular basis, even waking up in the morning and reading that list and feeling it, going before they go to bed at night, reading it and feeling that, and of course beginning some kind of meditation practice, you do that, you'll begin to notice month after month subtle changes happening in your awareness, subtle change happenings in your habit, the way you think, and of course your life will begin to change ultimately.
Wow, that is a great series of instructions. And essentially what you said is, by writing down what you want, you're getting people to focus on where they want to go. And then you said, and get into the feelings of it second,
right,
and then take action. And then, of course, you mentioned meditation, which is what opens your awareness more, what expands your awareness. One of the things I like to suggest to people is that they use what I call the magic question, which is, how can I?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any time you're in whatever situation you're in, you know, if your house just exploded, if your car was just wrecked, whatever has happened, positive or negative, you can always then say, okay, I'm here right now, this has happened, how can I? And then you fill in the blank with what you want to accomplish then. And when
Absolutely.
You do that, your mind just starts sending you ideas for how to do it.
Absolutely.
It works like a charm, and it's so simple that most people think that I must be kidding or something.
But you're evoking the law that states, ask and you shall receive.
Absolutely.
If you don't ask, you're not going to receive. So if you ask, how can I do this? The universe will start bringing you all kinds of scenarios as to how you can do that.
You know,
but if you keep asking, you know, well, how did I get into this situation and why is this always happening to me and why me, then the universe will start giving you those scenarios as well.
That's what I was just going to say, because, you know, if you say to yourself, what's wrong with me? Or
right.
How did I get into this situation? Your mind will create a plausible answer for that,
right.
Even if it isn't an accurate answer. If you say, what's wrong with me, your mind will think, okay, I'm supposed to tell him what's wrong with him, and it'll come up with a bunch of things. But if you say, what's right with me, what's good about this, it'll do the same thing. And it's really a choice that people often don't exercise as to where to put your attention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Empowering questions lead to an empowering life, empowered life.
Yeah, in some way, I mean, when you're feeling unhappy and stuck and all of this just seems so difficult and so impossible. But really, once you get aligned with this, you realize this is so simple.
Yes.
The universe is really a very easy place to live in once you get aligned with this law, this idea that you have a choice about where to put your attention.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of exercising the choice.
Absolutely.
It's, you know. Well, we're pretty much at the end of our time here, Michael. This has been really, really wonderful to have this time with you and to speak with another like-minded person like this. Do you have any parting comments that you want to leave people with?
What I would always like to leave people with is that the field is wide unto the harvest where they are concerned. That there's infinite possibilities, and do not limit themselves by thinking too small. Begin to think larger than they've ever thought before. I go back to the statement, have at least six believe at least six impossible things before breakfast, and then watch as that a paradigm keeps expanding and those new thoughts keep rushing in, inspiring you to do great things.
That's great. Well, I guess my final thought is that as I talk to you, what I notice is that you're just a great example of what actually happens when you do align yourself with this truth. And I really appreciate you. You're not the great exception. You're the great example. And I think that's the message to everybody listening, is that anyone can align themselves with this. And why not? What else is there to do?
Absolutely. I would concur with that, and I would throw it right back at you. You are a powerful example of living an empowered, wonderfully spirit-filled, enthusiastic, generous life, and I appreciate you in my life.
Well, I feel the same way. Thank you so much for being here, Michael, and to everyone listening, I thank you for being here, and I look forward to being with you again and again. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation with another of the Masters of the Secret. I know this information will help you master the secret yourself, the fact that what you focus on is created in reality. To thank you for listening, I have a very special free gift for you. As I've worked to master the secret and implement it in my own life, one of the most powerful tools I've used is HoloSync audio technology, which, when listened to using stereo headphones, places the listener in deep states of meditation, literally at the touch of a button. In addition to many mental, emotional, and spiritual benefits, Holosync creates an ability to focus your mind so powerfully that manifesting what you want becomes easy. I'd like to send you a free Holosync CD so you can try it yourself, along with a free special report explaining how it works and all the amazing benefits it's created for nearly 300,000 people who've used it in 173 countries. To get your free Holosync CD, just go to themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Remember to put the in front of Masters of the Secret. themastersofthesecret.com/free CD. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to being with you again next time.